Well, right now I'm trying to bring it up on this screen, so I have my own notes. But so far. Okay, my first screen simply said Happy Mother's Day, and so I say to you, Happy Mother's Day. And I'll have to get some notes out from my briefcase. Okay, I plan to honor several mothers from the Old Testament today, but I also want to honor my own mother, so that's what I'm going to start with. And I want to say this: there have many photographs been taken over the years of my growing up years and so forth, but my favorite photograph of my mother is a kind of interesting one. She was about 14 years old, and of course I never knew her then. But the picture shows her next to a steam locomotive in a railroad yard, and she's dressed like she were the person who was greasing up the locomotives, and she has a big oil can in her hand, about 14 years old. Her mother's there in the picture. The reason that I really cherish that one is that at the time, they lived across the street from a roundhouse in a railroad yard, and her mother owned a small hotel and restaurant, and the railroad guys came there to eat and to sleep. And so that's the kind of situation that she was in at that age. And what I remember about the photograph is the expression on her face. And I looked at that, and I say, my mother was an adventurer, and she was. She was 9 years old when her father died, and just a few years later, she and her grandfather and her mother and her and her brother and her two sisters moved to National City, California, from a quiet community in South Chicago. Quite a change. She was in high school only a short time. I'm not really sure how long, maybe till she was about 15. But I don't think she finished the second year. And she worked in the hotel, and she also got a job in a potato chip factory. To get that job, she had to say that she was 18 years old, which she wasn't. And she said that when her birthday came around, everybody knew her birthday was coming around. They said, well, how old are you now? Are you 19? No, she was 18 again. And I don't know how long she worked in that factory, but that's the kind of young person she was. What needed to be done was done. And that kind of thing came through a little bit as I was growing up, because I was the second child. And she wanted the best for me. And I feel that she was an advocate for me. I thought about three words when I was putting this together. And so I listed them as three of the many things that mothers do. And you won't hear the usual things. The first is to nurture, that's pretty ordinary. To rear and care for and educate and foster, that's what my dictionary called it. Nurture, to rear, to care for, to educate, and to foster. And I thought of two other words, advocate, which is defined this way, to plead for and recommend and support publicly. And I got that from my mother. when I was going into high school, I was 14 years old, she took me to meet the superintendent of the school. And she told him what I wanted to study. Well, it didn't turn out that way in a little high school where we were. I had to take the courses that were dished out. But she was advocating for me, and I appreciated that very much. And the other word is legacy. She wasn't, a legacy is defined as usually as financial. But a secondary definition is something inherited, such as a legacy of character. I got that legacy from my mother. And I think if you think about it with your mother, you think about the nurturing, and you think about the advocate for you, if you think about the legacy that is given to you or being given to you, I think you'll come to appreciate your mother the way I appreciated mine. But I want to look at some other mothers too. And there are some from the Old Testament, three of them that I want to talk about. And I made a list of the mothers I was going to talk about today. And one is Leah, the mother of six tribes of Israel. Tamar, the mother of Perez and Zerah. Ruth, the mother of Obed. And Ruth, my mother. And I have talked about my mother. So we'll look at some others. And I guess I want to add this, though, that my mother taught me to pray. She taught me long-term patience because she had that. We grew up in the days of the Great Depression. There wasn't much around. There wasn't anything available for us in the way of extra things. We didn't sometimes have quite enough food, and she made do. She taught me charitable thoughts, how to have charitable thoughts for others. She didn't put up with any of this bad talk about someone else. And she wasn't very common with that kind of talk herself. And she evaluated my emerging talents. I just felt that as I was growing up. She was looking at me. And I thought I was her favorite child. Well, others in the family thought that they were her favorite child. So I guess that took some of the wind out of my sails. But she encouraged the talents that seemed to her to lead to success for me. And I don't know if she was right on the money, but she was pretty good because I've had a pretty good life and been able to do a lot of interesting things. And she demonstrated perseverance and the value of song in my heart. So how about this other Ruth, the mother of Obed? And I want to read about that one. So go to the book of Ruth, chapter 4. You probably remember Ruth and Naomi and their story. And you remember about Boaz. And they were married. But I want to read about Boaz and the elders of the town. Because he had to go before the elders before he could marry her. She was not kin, but Naomi was. And Naomi had some land available to her, and she wanted it. And so Boaz had to do that for her. So I'm on verse 8 of chapter 4. Therefore the kinsman said to Boaz, "Buy it for thee." So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto the people, "Ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead may be cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were at the gate, in the gate, and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thy house like Rachel and like Leah, which two did build the house of Israel. Do thou worthily in Ephrathah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bare unto Judah. For of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. Now this is how Ruth began her marriage. The taking off of the shoe is a way of making a pledge in those days and in that place. And so that's what he had to do. And I don't know what that would actually accomplish today, but it worked then. And you notice that he was buying the land, but with land he wanted the wife. And we don't do things that way today. Aren't you girls glad that you don't face that? But the but that's what she had to do. She had to, of course, attract him first, and that's another story. But I want you to think of her as a mother. And she gave birth to Obed. And it says here that the woman said to Naomi, this is verse 14, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. So it's Naomi who benefited financially from what Ruth did. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child and laid it on her bosom and became nurse to it. So the grandmother nurtured this child originally, but not all the time. Obviously, Ruth had to raise this child, Obed. And Obed, when he was grown, became the father of Jesse. And Jesse, when he was grown, became the father of David, who became the king. So Ruth is part of the lineage of Jesus Christ. And Obed was an honored and a pillar in that lineage. He didn't get that way by mistake or by osmosis. He got that way because he had a good mother. And so I would have to say that when we look at those three things, the nurture, the advocacy, the legacy given, that Ruth gave Obed a legacy of character. And advocate to others that they recognized him. And Naomi gave him some nurture. But that was the quality that I was looking for in Ruth. A legacy of character and advocacy for those in the land and around her, that he was known and famous among the people. So I want to go to another mother in the Old Testament, and for this one I'll go to Genesis, and it'll be chapter 38. So go with me there to chapter 38. I don't want to tell you all of the story of Tamar, but I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to just tell you briefly that she was in a bad situation. She was married, and her husband died before there were any children. Well, in those days, there was this requirement that when a man dies and left no children, that his brother should marry her and raise children up unto him. And Tamar knew this and believed this, and she was determined to follow the law. So she went to Judah, her father-in-law, and said, do you have another son for me? And he knew that, of course. Well, it turned out that it got down to where there was one son, and he was younger, a lot younger. And he asked Tamar to wait for that son. So Tamar waited for that son. And when that son was old enough to marry, he married someone else with Judah's blessing. And so Tamar was being bypassed. And she wanted to do something about that. She was like my mother. She was an adventuress. She was willing to go outside of the box, let's say, to accomplish what she felt needed to be accomplished. So she dressed as a harlot, and she waited beside the trail that Judah was going to take when he went to with some guys to do things with the lambs. And when he came back, he saw her, and well, you can guess. But she said, well, what are you going to give me? And he said, I'll give you a she-goat. He said, well, how am I going to get that? He said, I'll have it sent to you. She said, what are you going to give me for assurance of that? And he said, what do you want? And she said, I'll take your signet ring and your bracelets and your staff. And he gave them to her, and she held on to them. Well, she put on her widow's garments and went and returned home. And here's taking up the story. He returned to Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend Adullamite, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he found her not. Then he asked the men of the place, saying, where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside? And they said, there was no harlot in this place. And he returned to Judah and said, I cannot find her. And also the men of the place said that there is no harlot in this place. And Judah said, let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her. And it came to pass about 3 months later that it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot, and also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth, and let her be burned. Not just stoning. He wanted the ultimate for this person who had done this awful thing. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet, the bracelets, and the staff? And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I. That's verse 26. And he admitted, she has been more righteous than I, because that I gave her not to Shelah, my son. And he knew her again no more. And so there she was. The time of her travail, she bore twins. And that's a pretty good story in itself. But the one who was considered the earliest was Perez. And Perez is another person in the lineage to Christ. So there was Tamar, who played the harlot, and she is part of the story of the lineage of Christ. And you'll notice that that the elders, the people who heard the pledge for Ruth, said that they hoped that she would turn out to be as good as Tamar and as good as Leah, whom I'm going to talk about next. So these people regarded her as a very righteous person, in spite of how she got this done. She knew how to get it done. She raised this child herself, a single mother. And Judah probably had very little to do with it. He wanted to have her burned, and he never had anything else to do with her. So what did she give her child? What kind of a heritage could she give him? And I'd have to say that she gave him a heritage of courage and a sense of what is right. And she raised him to be a pillar in the lineage to Christ. Now I say that's a pretty amazing mother. That sure is. Well, Leah, the mother of Judah and Dinah, and the mother of six of the tribes of Israel. This has got to be a very unusual person. And she was. Well, Jacob was looking for a wife, and he saw Rachel. Remember when he came to the well? And he loved Rachel. So he arranged to serve Laban, her father, for 7 years, and then he would have Rachel to be his wife. So he served for 7 years, and then he got a big surprise. So go to Genesis 29, verses 25 to 28, and I'll read some of this to you. So the day came, and he was to get Rachel for his wife, and it didn't happen. He got Leah instead. He didn't like that. And he said, "Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me?" This is verse 25. And Laban said, "It must not be so done in my country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her a week, and we will give thee also this also for that service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. So that's what Jacob was faced with. And so he had to agree to that. He had to serve 14 years. But he got Rachel a little ahead of time. And so it goes on to say, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. Verse 31 says, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So that was what happened because of his strange behavior, I guess. Verse 32, and Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. No, didn't happen. Nope. Jacob couldn't see any way that he could love Leah, which I think is pretty strange. But I guess you could say he really loved Rachel a lot, but I don't know. That attitude went on for a long time, too. And I want to read a little further about that. Of course, since Leah was going to be the mother of six of his 12 children, then she did bear children more. And each time she thought, now my husband will love me. But it just wasn't happening. Well, it came to a time when Laban was finished with his service. Or Jacob was finished with his service to Laban. And he left. But he pulled a few subterfuge things there, and he got away with quite a bit of the wealth of Laban. And then he had something else that came up that he was really worried about. Esau was coming to meet him. You might remember that Esau was his brother, and the mother arranged so that he would get the birthright. Esau was mad. He didn't get what was legally his, the birthright. It was given instead to Jacob. And so Jacob was worried, and they were going to meet. And so I'm going to read in chapter 33. And I want you to notice where Leah is in this story. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. Whoa. Now what's going to happen? If Esau is still mad and he's bringing 400 men and they're going to have to meet, what is going to happen? So Jacob lined things up. He put his children with his handmaidens first. And then he put Leah. And then he put Rachel and her one child, Joseph. And I want you to hear what actually happened. And behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaidens. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. Now, I read that first time. I thought, oh, he's putting the women and children first so they meet the wrath of Esau. But that's not what happened, is it? He must have had a second thought, because he dashed ahead and got there first and bowed himself down seven times. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are these with thee?" And he said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." And the handmaidens came near and their children, and they bowed themselves down. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves, and after came Joseph near with Rachel, and they bowed themselves. Now notice that the order of things. And Leah was ahead of Rachel, and Rachel wasn't mentioned. Joseph came, and Rachel. So there's been a turnaround here. And sometimes the person who perseveres wins out in the end. And I think that's where Lisa was. What characteristics did Leah give to her children? She raised six who would be the patriarchs of the children of Israel. And they were always respected. And they're respected to this very day. The children of Israel are mentioned over and over again in the Bible. The mother of those children must have been quite good mothers. We don't hear any direct information about that. Just have to assume that. But what kind of legacy did she give them? And what kind of advocacy did she give them? And what kind of nurture? Surely she advocated them very well, because everybody respects them to this very day. And one of them was Judah. And the respect there is obvious. Well, I want to go ahead to a couple of other mothers. And so go with me to earlier in Genesis. All the way back to Abraham. Abraham's wife, Sarah. I'm going to read a little bit about what she experienced. I think this particular incident really demonstrates something important about Sarah. So I'm in Genesis chapter 21, verse 7 through 12. And she said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age." And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. But something happened that Sarah noticed. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. He was a kid, you know, he had grown up a little bit, and he was mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir to my son, even with Isaac." And the thing was very grievous in Abram's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, "Let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, and in Isaac shall thy seed be called." So that, you know, I used to think about that, Isaac, and I thought that was kind of automatic. You know, God had chosen Isaac. Well, you see, it wasn't automatic. It took Sarah to kick over the barrel, and she did. And why did she do that? Because they had this feast when Isaac was weaned. And she saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, mocking. Now there was a mother who really advocated for her child. There was a mother who wasn't going to let this other kid be a bully over him. Wow, that's quite a mother. And there are other things we could read about Sarah, but I think that, to me, that's the one that stands out. Now, there is a mother. She stood up for her son, even to the point of challenging her husband, and God supported her. Wow, that's terrific. God supported her. In the Book of Mormon, let's go to 1 Nephi, chapter 1, verse 146, on page 13. Now in this, you might recall that Lehi sent his sons back to get the things from the house, from the treasury. And when they left, of course, their mother was very worried, afraid they would not come back alive, actually. So in verse 146, it says, "And it came to pass that after we had come down into the wilderness unto our father, behold, he was filled with joy. And also my mother, Sariah, was exceeding glad, for she truly had mourned because of us, for she had supposed that we had perished in the wilderness. And she also had complained against my father, telling him that he was a visionary man, saying, Behold, thou hast led us forth from the land of our inheritance, and my sons are no more, and we perish in the wilderness. And after this manner of language had my mother complained against my father. And it came to pass that my father spake unto her, saying, I know that I am a visionary man, for if I had not seen the things of God in a vision, I should not have known the goodness of God, but had tarried at Jerusalem and had perished with my brethren. But behold, I have obtained a land of promise, in which things I do rejoice. Yea, and I know that the Lord will deliver my sons out of the hands of Laban and bring them down again unto us in the wilderness. And after this manner of language did my father, Lehi, comfort my mother, Sariah, concerning us, while we journeyed in the wilderness up to the land of Jerusalem to obtain the record of the Jews. And when we had returned to the tent of my father, behold, their joy was full, and my mother was comforted. And she spake, saying, "Now I know of a surety that the Lord hath commanded my husband to flee into the wilderness. Yea, and I also know of a surety that the Lord hath protected my sons and delivered them out of the hands of Laban and gave them power whereby they could accomplish the thing which the Lord had commanded them." And after this, after the manner of this language, did she speak. So I don't know that anything that Sariah said other than that is recorded, but that certainly is. And it's kind of ordinary and expected that she would be worried about her son's welfare. Most mothers are. But that she used their return as the final evidence for the truth of what her husband has been seeing and having them do, leaving their home. It must have been really tough for her. They were well established there. And they left, they must have had wealth too. And they left all of that and went out into the wilderness like campers and hunting for their food. And they were there a long time. Not only that, later they got in boats and went drifting out across the ocean looking for the promised land. It's a good thing that she was convinced by that time, because it would have been really tough on her to go through all of that. But she was a quite ordinary mother in her nurture and her care for her sons. But she was probably quite an unordinary mother to put up with what she had to travel in the wilderness and to go to the promised land. And I think that she deserves a lot of credit for being an extraordinary mother. Well, there's one mother more that I want to talk about. And this is our first mother. So go with me to Genesis chapter 3. And I want to read verse 6. I think that what went on in her conversation with the serpent defines Eve as a mother. Nothing else is said in the Bible about that, except that she was cursed and so forth. But I think verse 6 just kind of defines her, and I like to look at that and compare it with those attributes of mothers that I was talking about. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. Now, just look at that. She saw that it was good for food. Yes, that's nurturing, isn't it? Good for food. Someone up here of the little kids, you know, talking about their mothers, brought up the subject of food. Another brought up the subject of laundry. I thought that was kind of neat. And the subject of food is important to all of us who look to our mothers. And pleasant to the eyes. Well, that is a woman's trait, isn't it? Things need to be pleasant to the eyes. You want things arranged just right. You want the colors. You want things to be pleasant. And I enjoy some of the meals that I'm served at home, because it comes to me and there's lettuce and there's color there. You know, there are these little peppers of different colors, and I get orange ones and yellow ones, and I used to only have green ones, you know. But if it were up to me, that's what it would be. But there's color, and my food is pleasant to look at. And the same with the house. When Vivian first came into it, it was all off-white. You know, I thought, what's wrong with that? No, that's sensible. That's what I used to do with the apartments I rented, you know, off-white. But no, she wanted color. And now that I've painted a little bit, I like it, because it's pleasant to the eyes. A characteristic of mothers. And a tree to be desired to make one wise. My mother wanted me to be in school and have the subjects that I thought I needed. So she took me to the superintendent's office and asked about that. She wanted me to learn and be wise. When I was about 10 years old, she bought me a microscope and some books about biology and science because she noted my interest and she wanted to feed that. And she sacrificed for that too because we didn't have the money to spend. And that has always been something that I really treasured about my mother, that she cared that much about me. And I think that it's right here in Eve. It's part of the mother's makeup, and it was there. And then, of course, she gave what she thought was good to her husband, and mothers do that too. And we husbands certainly do appreciate it. So in honoring mothers today, the children did it best, but in honoring mothers today, I hope that we will remember those three words: nurture, advocacy, and a legacy. Because if we think about our mothers in that way, we can see how they have contributed to our own lives and the successes that we have had and the successes that we will have if we're still growing up and still working on what we are going to be. But what I have been, I have to attribute largely to my mother, not to my efforts, but to hers and to her encouragement and her foresight and the many sacrifices that she made that have helped me. So I thank you for putting up with my rather strange presentation today, but I hope that you will remember some of the things I said. And for all of you mothers out there, a happy Mother's Day.